really crazy stuff happens, I kind of numb myself to it, and I don't deal with it. And until the last few years, I've learned I don't deal with it, but then I can come back to it and deal with it at a better time. And I think that's the healthy thing, is coming back to it. I didn't do the healthy thing, and I just buried it.
Welcome to There Is Hope. Any advice or counsel given is provided for informational purposes only. Your host for There Is Hope, Richard Dover.
Well, welcome to There Is Hope Radio. We're going to continue our conversation with Joshua Dover, my son. And we were talking about tour duty in Iraq and some of his experiences and what we're going to do. And the discussion this time is talk more about how his experiences in the Marines and in Iraq has helped him in his recovery process, rehabilitation process of his motorcycle crash. So, Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So your voice is still there, so we're able to do another interview if it'll hold up still. In the midst of our conversation, the last time we were talking about you being in Iraq and how you learned how to cope with certain things and some of your experiences, and we kind of were talking about you just the fear, dealing with fear and the threat of what could happen and the risks that are involved. What I want to do, as I was just thinking about this, is you shared something with me a couple of days ago, and it got me thinking. You had shared that you literally saw guys just lose it, fall apart. And
yep.
you are thankful that even though maybe some of your coping mechanisms were not good, or maybe they were good at the time, but you should have got help earlier after coming out of the Marines. Because some of those things I think are good coping skills, but we can't just bury things for sometimes years because it will come back and bite us. And I think you know that yourself through your own experience. Can you give an example of where there was a situation, and I don't know, and maybe it was not even that tense of a situation. I think of different stories. I'm just going to share a couple of things you shared with me, and maybe one of them will apply. I know one time I talked to you, and you guys were, you're like sardines. Am I right? You're like sardines in a sardine can when you're in the
army. Oh, yeah. The vehicles, they're made for equipment, and, an engineer who was sitting in an office designed it for people being in it, too. I don't know that they ever got inside one.
Very good. And so I know one time, you tell me at times you can't really see all there is, and you guys would go over and they get flipped over. People got injured. I don't know, maybe even somebody got killed. But can you give a story to help our listeners to hear how serious it could be and some very unhealthy ways of people dealing with it?
Well, yeah, we can bring up one I kind of mentioned in the prior interview. We were talking about a rocket that was fired at me on a post. And I was actually on post with another Marine, and we were on the outskirts of the main base, and we're basically one of, I believe it was like six or seven different posts around the entire base to ensure, that the base is protected. And we're the kind of like the so-called last line of defense if anything happens.
Okay, so just stop there for a second. So
yeah.
The base is being protected because of you guys, but who's protecting you guys?
That would be us.
yeah, that's what I wanted to prove is the point there. So go ahead.
Yeah, so, on our base, in the bases, we have weapons, and, we have 50 cal machine gun and our own weapons and grenade launchers and all kinds of stuff. But essentially, when you're staring out in the desert, just think of the desert kind of in Iraq being kind of like a very desolate desert here. If you think of kind of Nevada and you get rid of all the plant life and all you have is the dirt, that's kind of what Iraq is like. In a lot of places. And so as you're on post, you're staring, on the horizon line, or you're staring at a hill or something like that. And it just so happened that on the other side of a hill, there was some Al-Qaeda that had made an improvised rocket, and they kind of had sighted it in on, unbeknownst to me and the gentleman with me, they had sighted it in on our post. And when they fired it at us, we didn't actually see anything. What we heard the sound, and we often had howitzers that would shoot out of our base, shooting into different parts of Iraq where we were fighting. And so you would always hear these howitzers firing all the time, and you're used to the sound of what artillery sounds like, except this time the sound that myself and the other Marine heard was a very high-pitched whistle to it. And we both kind of looked at each other, like, kind of uncertain, and then it both dawned on us.
You realized what it was.
Yeah, it was, like, at the last split second, we realized that we were literally having a improvised rocket that was on its way, kind of thing. And we both dove on the ground of our post, and there was a loud explosion, and thankfully for us, the Al-Qaeda's improvised rocket wasn't aimed, it's not a aiming system like what we have. It's more like doing some math and angles and hoping kind of thing,
right.
Is the way they were firing. And thankfully for us, it blew up 100 yards behind our post, and we both were survived. And if it would have hit our post, we would have turned into what some people refer to as pink mist, because there would have been nothing left. And to kind of answer what you were asking me for, immediately the next day, we still had to go back on post. It's not like, okay, now you can get a weekend off kind of thing. We went right back on our post, and the other Marine just kind of fell apart, and I couldn't get him to help watch the post, couldn't get him on the radio, nothing. He just kept talking over and over about how we almost died and why are we even here, and just coming up with all these, reasons of why we shouldn't be here. And basically, I was doing a post on my own because he was falling apart. And this happened for about 3 or 4 days. And I remember at the time being angry at him, because all I could think is, get over it. We lived. We got a job to do. And he was processing
how normally you would process.
And I was bottling it up. What's that?
That's how you're taught, right? That's how
you normally would do things.
right.
Something bad happens, you're going to kind of cry, break down, that kind of thing. That's normal. That's everybody's normal reaction to do something like that.
But you're taught as a Marine that you got to do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do, and you just got to toughen it up and, bite the bullet. And there's, hundreds of Marines on this base relying on us too, whether or not, we're having a good day or not.
Right.
So it is one of those things where at the time I was angry at him, but now looking back, I realize it's not so simple. It's not like a light switch you can just turn on and turn off. It's honestly, you don't know how you're going to react until something like that happens. And
okay.
I don't think there is anything wrong with what he did, in the sense that that's a human reaction. I think it was hard and hurtful in the moment because of our duty, but I think what he did was human.
Right. So, but what did what you do not human?
I think it was. I think what it was is it more so the training kicked in, and not just training. I've gone through a lot of stuff in life to where I've kind of, when really crazy stuff happens, I kind of numb myself to it, and I don't deal with it. And until the last few years, I've learned I don't deal with it, but then I can come back to it and deal with it at a better time. And I think that's the healthy thing, is coming back to it. I didn't do the healthy thing, and I just buried it. And I should have, after the deployment or even after my shift, gone and talked to somebody. And unfortunately, I didn't. I just buried it, and it kind of showed its ugly head several years later after I was already out of the military.
So let's talk for that for a moment. It might take us on a little bit of a rabbit trail, but that's okay, because we're actually sharing this for others, and we don't know who is listening. And again, I hope that there's people that are listening that have gone through trauma or other things, and this is being helpful to them, and they're saying, hey, somebody is hearing my story, is that me and you have talked recently that one of the problems for the military, I don't know if it's more of the Marines or not, but For example, you didn't talk to somebody about that. And the reality is, how many events did you go through as a Marine? And yours, you know, I don't want to minimize what you went through, because you and I both know at the same time, there are people in all the armed forces that have gone through more horrific things than you could ever imagine
easily.
That you've gone through. So what you went through is, you know, tragic. I don't want to lessen that, but you've gone through a lot worse. But even with the stuff that you went through, there was not – somebody should have said, hey, guys, come here. We need to talk, and we're going to give you a little bit of counseling to work through this and that. You went through some years in the military that was not done about anything. Is that accurate?
I will say that the one thing that they did before we came back, they went through and asked every Marine, do you need to talk to somebody? And about anything that happened, do you need to see a counselor? Well, I can tell you, you don't admit that you need to see a counselor when you're in front of all of your buddies and other Marines, when you're supposed to be, you know, these tough men and everything else. There's almost an unwritten code that you don't admit that you need help with something like that, because then, first of all, if somebody admits they need help with that, then you, as a fellow Marine, start to question whether or not that person is strong enough to be man in a foxhole with you, you know,
right.
Or is
right.
that guy going to freak out on you? So there's almost like a unwritten code to never admit that, yeah, you need to talk to somebody kind of thing. And so though it was offered, I think it was offered without realization of what they were really offering, because it should have been more discreet in the sense that they're
so
not asking in front of a bunch
that?
Of people. It literally, you had, you know, typically a platoon sergeant or something would come in and have everybody together and be like, hey, does anybody need to see a counselor for anything they saw? And nobody's going to raise their hand. I mean, that's like...
I thought you were exaggerating when you told me that.
No. No.
Bullshit. It's crazy.
And so, you know, if you raised your hand, you might as well put a letter on your back that says, you know, avoid me.
Right, right.
You know, so it was kind of one of those things where, you know, whether you thought you needed to talk to somebody or not, you're not going to admit it.
So when was this done? When would this be done?
This happened right before we came back from Iraq.
Okay, so
it was on our way coming back.
So you're still going to be in the Marines?
Oh yeah, definitely. And even when I got out, there's a what they call separation that you go through, and they train you, or excuse me, teach you how to do a resume and that kind of stuff. But there is no like it's supposed to be to become a civilian again or join civilian life again. And the problem is. You know, for those that were in combat or were in a war zone or anything like that, or even just in the military in general, life in the civilian side of things is a whole different ball game, and they don't do enough. It's only a week-long thing you go through. Well, I can tell you, we spent months preparing to go to Iraq, and they show you videos and do everything else to make you hate your enemy and see your enemy killing your fellow Marines to get you in that mode to do... you know, be able to pull a trigger and to be able to go over there and deal with anything you see. Yet, and they spend months doing that. But then they only give you 1 week to prepare yourself to become a civilian again after you've seen some of the most horrific things you'll ever see. You only get a week to recover from that, you know, to get yourself in the right mind.
So I think it'd be safe to say that this explains when we hear that somebody that's in the military and they have PTSD, and some of us who have never gone through it, and we start to wonder, well, it sounds like every person had PTSD. What about the people in World War II? Did they have PTSD? They seem to survive, and of course, we find out later that they really didn't survive, a lot of them.
Shell shock is what their version of PTSD was.
Right, exactly. It'd be safe to say that our country's done a very poor job in the realm with the knowledge, the wisdom, the education to know how to treat help counsel individuals that have gone through you've gone through. Having all that knowledge, we've done a very poor job as a nation to take the knowledge and the wisdom that's there and actually implement it. Would that be accurate?
I would 100% agree with you, and I think anyone that would disagree, you just tell them to look at the numbers of suicides among veterans, because that number is astronomical, and it's for a reason. And it is, I believe, largely in part the fact that you have so much training to be able to take life and to experience horrors, but you're given next to no training after you've dealt with that and seen all that to know how to deal with that emotionally and mentally once it's there.
Right, right. So in the midst of all this, going through this, as we've shared these different stories, you have had to deal with PTSD, dealt with, I think, some bad choices in life.
Oh, yeah.
Bad coping skills and all those things. And we could focus on all the negative that has gone on through handling things maybe the wrong way, the experiences in Iraq. But what I want us to kind of finish up in this interview is the positive side of what you went through Iraq that has helped you tremendously to be able to go through the recovery you're going through your motorcycle accident. And I want to cover a couple of things. One, my understanding is the weather is absolutely extreme when you're in Iraq. Two, you probably have learned they have the worst meals there is or no meals there is. Three, you've learned to go with no sleep whatsoever and probably days upon end. You know, all those kind of negative things, but can you turn those around as how they have been some positives for you to be able to deal with some of the most horrific pain you can imagine, dealt with unbelievable fear, deal with the unknown, all the different things you're going through now that are very hard for you, very discouraging to you. Can you share some things in your experience in the Marines, your experience in Iraq, that have actually helped you to go through some things? Because me and you have talked that you have really wondered how some people could go through what you've gone through if they did not have some of the things that you gained in the midst.
I think, honestly, it comes down to kind of only one thing in reality, and that is that you can go through a lot more physically and mentally, emotionally, than you believe you can. And Iraq was proof of that to me. And, you know, people complain about it being 100 degrees or something. Well, you can complain to me when it's 130 degrees and you have no AC and you're wearing 70 pounds of gear and you're having to run through a village. Then you can come talk to me. And you could have told me that I was going to do that before I deployed, and I would have laughed at you and told you that's not possible.
You would say that's not humanly possible.
I would. Like, you know, that's just the reality of things. You know, a lot of the stuff I went through in Iraq, I never in a million years could have thought I could have done it. And if you would have told me before I went that I was going to do those things, I would have laughed at you and told you there's no way I could do those things. And the thing is when the hardship happens, you may feel like you can't get through it or you can't do it, but the reality is you are able to do a lot more than you think you can do. And Iraq is kind of what proved that to me, and so that has helped me tremendously with this accident, is the fact that I can tell you I've spent 3 weeks in the past with this injuries from the motorcycle accident in level 10 pain, sometimes 6 hours at a time, 2 to 3 times a day. And I can tell you, if you would have told me that prior to the accident, I would have kind of laughed at you. And I thought, that's not possible. Nobody can bear that. And then when I think back to what I went through in Iraq, I realized that, yeah, a lot of times when you think something's impossible, it really isn't. And you really have more than you really think you do. And I've learned that in this motorcycle accident recovery, that's the same application that's worked in Iraq, is, you know, you can do a lot more than you realize you can do. And your body is capable of doing things that you never thought it could. And your mind and your spirit, same thing. And so I think honestly it just boils down to that one thing is from Iraq is you can do stuff that you don't think you can.
Okay. And then what I want to cover, and then you haven't talked really about this in the past, when you say all this, I'm a guy who's been a pastor. I'm a guy that is very committed in my relationship with Jesus Christ. I'm a guy that believes in the power of God and spirituality, all that stuff that anybody that listens to our show knows that's where I'm coming from. You have been up and down in that walk, and I'm making an assumption, I don't know, when you were in Iraq, and I have a direction I'm going with all this. You were in Iraq. I don't think you probably were the most spiritual person in Iraq. Would that be accurate?
I wasn't the most spiritual. However, I did a lot of praying, and I did occasionally show up to a service by a chaplain.
So and, the reason I wanted to bring it up is because some people listening to this will say, oh, okay, so you don't need to have God in your life. If you're just a Marine, you just can pull up the bootstrap, bite the bullet, you can bear the pain, you can do it. You don't need God in your life to do it. I'm going to challenge and say I don't believe that's the case. You know, you're at a different walk than I am spiritually. But what would you say to that statement when I say, I don't think you truly can just pull something within? There has to be a higher power someplace in the midst of it.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, would you like to walk through hot coals barefooted, or would you like to walk with them with shoes on? You know, it's kind of like that's how I think of it. I think the end result is, you're going to get through whatever you're going to have to get through. And if you reach out to somebody or to, you know, in my thoughts, you know, higher power being God, that's something that's going to, at times, ease things, whether it's pain is being eased or not. Sometimes it's just the thoughts in your own head of, at least God's with me and you're not alone. That can make huge, huge differences for you. But
did you have those thoughts when you were in Iraq?
I honestly prayed so much, you wouldn't even know, because there was so much fear, and all I could think is, you know, God help me. And I unfortunately lost my best friends in the Marine Corps right after my first deployment, and his father had told both me and him before we joined the Marine Corps we were going to get killed. And the fact that his son had died, when I went to my second deployment, I was positive the entire deployment I was going to take a bullet. In that entire deployment, I was scared to death that I was going to take a bullet because my best friend had died, and so now I was supposed to. And I did more praying than you could think, but all I could think is, you know, God, make it swift. And it was, you know, I was even so into that thought that when we were flying the 747 back home from Iraq, the second deployment, I thought the jet was probably going to crash somehow, because somehow I made it out of Iraq.
So you're praying to God. So did you see guys that you were with that absolutely had an antagonism to God, that had no faith, that mocked out of stuff? Did you see any of that when you were in Iraq?
I personally didn't see any of that. I knew some people that had faith, some didn't, some had different faith, some were agnostic. I didn't see anyone that was, you know, anti-faith or anything. It was like, I think pretty much everyone was kind of on the kind of same playing field, in the sense of everyone can have their own thoughts and stuff about religion, but keep it to yourself. And that kind of thing, you know, don't throw it in somebody's face if you don't agree with their religion or something like that, because
right,
whatever somebody needs to get through what we're going through, let them have it, you know.
Right.
And I'll admit, I was one of those guys that my first deployment, I smoked cigarettes like chimneys, and, you know, and that was a coping mechanism. But, you know, whatever it took for you to be able to get through what we were going through was okay, and nobody was going to ostracize you.
Okay, now let's go and look, and we're going to have to finish up this interview here. We're running out of time. just look at it. If you're in Iraq, this go around in your life experience of this motorcycle crash, you've seen, and this is a whole other interview, but you've seen this. This will start getting into talking about your actual rehabilitation and stuff in your accident. But you've seen the power of prayer work this go around.
Oh, absolutely. No, without
right?
a doubt.
You have no doubt in your mind whatsoever.
I've had miracles happen right in front of my eyes on my own body
and
in front of doctors and such, you know, with them
and so if you
being
look
amazed.
At that, you look at that, and in Iraq, you don't necessarily get to see it, right? Because you don't know what missile didn't hit you. We're going to have to end this conversation. There are so many more things that we could talk about. I don't know. We may do a couple more on just the whole Marine thing. Get journey. I just want to remind individuals, you're listening to There Is Hope Radio. There is hope for anybody and everybody know what they've gone through. I know there's hope. Josh has gone through his own things many times, I'm sure, and yet he's still alive today. And for you that is listening right now, there is hope. What I wanted to end with is to let you know that the hope is through Jesus Christ. Our show is called There's Hope, that through Jesus Christ we can have hope, that he will give us the strength when we have no strength. God is on our side, that he's for you. He's not against you, no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been, no matter whatever dot life you've had, no matter what actions you've ever taken in life, that there's a God that loves you, that cares for you. I believe that's part of Joshua's story also through this whole motorcycle crash. I want us to end the show to let you know there is hope. If you need someone to talk to, I want you to know that we're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call a phone number, it's a toll-free number. It's 1-866-WANT-GOD. Real easy to remember. 1-866-WANTGOD. 1-866-WANT-GOD. You can call 24 hours a day. At any point in time, we'll pray with you, we'll talk with you, we'll do anything that we can be of help to you, to help you to be able to make it through whatever you're going through. Joshua, thank you for sharing your story.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to There Is Hope, and any advice or counsel given was provided for informational purposes only. For more information on what you've heard about today, click on thereishoperadio.org. That's thereishoperadio.org.